Hello and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. This is the continuation of our 80s movie reminiscing.
Yes. It's the son of part one.
The son?
Or daughter.
Yeah. Equal opportunity at Fool's
Daily. Yeah, absolutely.
We finished, Matt had just done his third movie.
The brilliant Red Dawn.
Which was a terrible movie. However, there are many people that says my movie will equal it in the terribleness stakes, including my wife, who absolutely hates this movie and thinks it's stupid and ridiculous, and why are you watching that crap again?
She's a fine woman.
And it's Footloose.
Oh, my good God.
I love Footloose.
Do you know what? I was discussing Footloose just last night, having watched Guardians of the Galaxy, and obviously there's some significant references in there to Footloose. Claire then kind of whispered into a cushion, "Well, I've not seen Footloose either," which I was absolutely stunned and amazed. How could, you know, it's of its time, but it's not a bad, not horrible movie.
No. Now, the remake is awful.
I couldn't do that. I couldn't bring myself to watch it.
I did watch it. I will never watch it again. The original, I love the original. You've got a 25-year-old Kevin Bacon pretending he's 17.
Yeah.
You've got some really good actors in it. You know, Diane Weiss.
Yeah.
Chris
Penn before it got really fat.
In it. Jessica Parker. Jessica Parker.
Yeah.
What's her name?
The one out of Sex and the City.
Yeah, Sarah.
Sarah Jessica Parker. Yeah. John Lithgow.
You know, some really good actors. And then you got Kevin Bacon, who at that time was not a great actor. He's become good, I think.
Mm.
You know, in the TV series that he's doing at the moment, The Following, I think he's brilliant in that.
Oh, he's done some cracking films.
But in this, he wasn't great. No. However, it is brilliant. They had played chicken in tractors to Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah, holding out for a hero.
They go to a line dancing club, get in a fight,
mm-hmm.
have another fight outside a barn, and then do American style synchronized dancing that you just, no one does ever.
Yeah.
At the end. It's awesome. What can go wrong? It's got a hottie in it.
Who?
Her, what's her name?
Laurie Singer, was it?
Yes. She's hot in that movie.
Well, if you're into girls with 12-year-old boys' bodies, I suppose. Hardly call her a hottie.
She wears red cowboy boots.
Oh, yeah, you got me there.
I win.
Yeah, you win. I can't believe none of us had a dance film in. At least it wasn't Dirty Dancing.
Oh, no, not Dirty Dancing. But, yeah, love Footloose. However, many people, I'm sure, will now be going, oh, my God, how did you pick Footloose? But there were other movies that I could have picked instead of Footloose.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I think we've probably both got some fairly embarrassing ones in our list.
In the bigger list, yes. Yeah. But no, Footloose is, and I mean, I'm a sucker for. I mean, because Footloose is basically a rom-com.
Yeah.
At its heart, it's a rom-com. You know, boy meets girl, boy gets on with girl. They have a fight. They break up. They get back together. Happy ending.
Disapproving families.
Yeah.
And like all great teen films, it's about the teens railing against, you know, the unfair older generation as well.
Yeah, and now we're part of the unfair older generation.
Yeah, and given the fact I can't dance, and if I'd seen Kevin Bacon dance in real life as he does in that film now, I would also ban dancing.
And it has got a great soundtrack.
Yes.
And that's the thing about 80s movies. They had great soundtracks. We were talking about Top Gun yesterday. And Top Gun has a brilliant soundtrack to it. You know, the heat is on.
Yes.
That's not even from Top Gun, though. But, you know, Glenn Frey just did many. I went through the danger zone. I mean, they're awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome songs.
Yeah.
And there are many good songs in Footloose. Plus, you know, as you say, you're teaching Sean Penn to dance by using a Walkman.
Oh, God,
when yes. Rebecca saw it, she said, what's he holding in his hand? I said, it's a Walkman. She said, what's that? And I said, it's got a tape in it. And she said, what's that?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely other generation, I guess.
Yes. Okay. Go on then, what's your next? Because the next two, no one is going... I'm pretty sure that no one is going to... listen to this, is going to argue against my next two.
Do you not? That's a...
No, I'm full confident that my next two will be met with universal aplomb.
Okay. Well, because as I said in episode one, I was trying to avoid repeats from genre. So bear in mind, I've already had Predator as an action flick. Time Bandits is kind of a fantasy flick. Red Dawn is my Brat Pack flick. I then thought about comedy films. And that was really tricky because there are a lot of really good comedy films came out in the 80s. Trading Places almost made it into the top five.
Oh, that's a great movie.
This is a brilliant film. I'm just having a look. Caddyshack, that was an 80s film.
Yeah, very good.
Ghostbusters, of course.
Animal House.
Animal House 80s? I don't know. Blues Brothers certainly was.
See, while you're talking, I'm going to look up Animal House, because Animal House must be just in... It surely wasn't...
Well, I don't know. If it, using your own measure, if it came out in 1980, it's not an 80s film, so who can tell?
Ah, oh, see? No, it's a 70s movie. 1978 for Animal House.
So, having gone round all of those, nearly settling on Ghostbusters...
I remember wearing... cargo pants had just sort of become a thing in 1985.
Yeah.
And when I saw Ghostbusters, and so they looked like the jumpsuits that they wear. So all me and my mates had cargo pants because they were the cool trousers to wear.
That's not cool.
It was in 1985.
But in the end...
What did you go for?
Stripes.
Bill Murray.
That's his French cousin. Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, accidentally kind of enlist in the army. All sorts of hilarity ensue. To me, it just edges Ghostbusters. It's certainly more of a Bill Murray vehicle than Ghostbusters, although he is the kind of cornerstone of that. But really kind of showcased his whole kind of slacker, laconic approach. Some great little quips in it. And to me, just really, really funny. Has dated, obviously. It's got a young John Candy in it, and a few others that went on to bigger things. But it's just very much in that kind of same comedy mold as the things that came out of Animal House and the sort of John Landis directed comedy films. But for me, it just edged it from Ghostbusters, because the scene where they go out having taught themselves drill and do this kind of almost dancey drill kind of approach is just brilliant.
Yeah, see, I'm just looking down my list, my extended list for what, because I didn't split them out by comedy, so I do have other movies of the same genre.
Yeah,
and I'm just looking down my list for comedies, and interestingly, the first one that I come across is also a Misfit Army movie, but it's Private Benjamin.
Yeah.
If I'd done it the way that you've done it,
yeah,
that would have been my first one that I brought in, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I had a real tough time debating between Trading Places, Ghostbusters, and Stripes, which one of those three would make it in.
I think I would have picked Trading Places out of those three.
Just because she takes the top off?
Because it's an excellent movie.
It is an excellent movie.
Plus, it also introduces the idea of orange juice futures.
Yeah.
And who knew what an orange juice future was? Who knows what an orange juice future is now?
Yes. But for me, yeah, Stripes just edges it. again, is kind of ridiculous, slightly anti-Russian, but bloody good fun. If you haven't seen it, you must watch it.
Very, very good. Very good. So, my... Okay, so I've got two left.
Yep.
And you've got one left.
I've got one left, yes.
All right, so I've got two left. And I'm pretty sure that I'm on safe ground with these two.
Okay.
So my first one is Princess Bride.
I know that there was a lot of people would be extremely annoyed if it didn't make one of our lists. I was going to just stand my ground and say, you know, it's a really good film, but if I had to pick five, it wouldn't make the five. So why has it made your five?
Oh, because it's brilliant.
Oh, it is, yes.
It's, and it's so influential. You look through, I mean, you know, dragging it into gaming. You look through games. There are so many references to Princess Bride across the genre. I mean, we were talking the other day about, with Carl from Second Thunder about open combat.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the first mini expansion they're doing is The Swordsman.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's because it's completely based on Aldo Montoya.
Yeah.
So that's a brand new game that's out now that is referencing characters from The Princess Bride. Now, that's because Carl's a similar age to us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a great movie because it is a kids movie,
mm-hmm.
but it is a kids and it's a kids movie that was made at a time when fantasy films were dying a death.
Yeah,
you know, we were getting things like Hawk the Slayer and Krull.
I was about to say Krull, the Beastmaster.
Yeah, yeah, all of those sorts of things. That's what you were getting as fantasy TV because science fiction ruled. The success of Star Wars just meant that everything was science fiction.
At this point, then I must name the film that almost made it into my top five based on name alone. Because of all of those kind of post-Star Wars sci-fi was cool and there were a lot of kind of low-budget films being made. The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension with Peter Weller in it. It's actually not a bad film. I've not seen it recently, but what a brilliant name.
That is a very good title. Very good. But so fantasy films were awful. I mean,
yeah.
I remember I was so excited to go and see Kroll because I'd seen the trailers and I thought it looked awesome and it had, you know, this awesome throwing star. And
yeah.
I pestered my parents for ages. When Kroll comes out, can we go and see it? When Kroll comes out, can we go and see it? And then we went and saw it.
It was terrible.
And it was awful.
Yeah.
It's still awful now.
Yes.
Even Lisette Anthony cannot save it.
Well, didn't they overdub her entire dialogue?
I've got a feeling they did, yes.
I'm fairly sure they overdubbed their entire dialogue to make it more American-friendly. I'm just looking through my list to see if I've got any fantasy films that... Funny enough, Princess Bride is in my nearly made it list. I'm just looking through it to see if there's any other kind of fantasy films of that era, and I don't think there is, which in itself is a measure of what was going on for fantasy during the 80s. No,
yeah, because I mean, I suppose the other thing for fantasy during the 80s was indie.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, again, it's lifting from the same 1930s serials that Star Wars is lifted from.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a fantasy serial. I bet if there had been a 1930s fantasy serial.
Yeah.
That they could have lifted from. Then fantasy films in the 80s would have been very different.
Yeah, but that being said, I mean, a lot of fantasy stuff was going on. You know, D&D was really exploding, certainly towards the late 80s, I guess, as kind of the...
Yeah, no, I suppose you're right. I mean, but...
But it just wasn't a mainstream thing.
I suppose the best fantasy film before Princess Bride was Conan.
Yeah. He didn't even make my nearly list because, you know, it's a watchable film, but it's
the second.
Not.
The second, I actually prefer second one. I think
what?
Well, no, because the first one.
That's the first, that's just the most ridiculous thing you've ever said. I've said far more ridiculous. How can you possibly say that Conan the Destroyer is better than Conan the Barbarian?
Because it's more action.
When people listen to this, you will be derided on Twitter.
I'm derided on Twitter all the time.
But more than normal about that ridiculous statement that Conan the Destroyer is better than Conan the Barbarian.
I prefer Conan the Destroyer to Conan the Barbarian because Conan the Barbarian has some exceptionally slow and long bits that nothing happens. Conan the Destroyer, it's always stuff happening.
You're a ridiculous fool.
Well, you've already proved you know nothing about movies because you picked Red Dawn.
It's great. Yes, not a lot of fantasy. Like I say, Time Bandits is on my list as the closest I've come to fantasy. Yep. There's quite a few sci-fi films on there.
There will be. But that's why I picked Princess Bride, because it was a standout movie at the time. It did have competition, though. When I was thinking about fantasy movies, and its main competition came from Labyrinth.
Yeah.
The reason that Labyrinth didn't make my list, and actually didn't even make consideration in the end, I haven't seen it for ages. Yeah. Like Willow, it's one of those ones, you can't get it on DVD.
No.
For whatever reason, they just don't sell it.
Yeah.
And it's never on television, any channel, even those things like Horror Plus One and stuff. Yeah. It's just never on. So I haven't seen it for a long, long time. Though, I must admit, if it came on, then I would watch it.
Yeah, I'd probably
watch it. One of my favourite characters because, you know, Ludo and the Bog of Eternal Stench.
Yeah. I'd watch it because it was the beginning of my and Jennifer Connelly's long-lasting love affair.
You're very one-sided, long-lasting love affair.
Yes. I mean, clearly, she's slightly less forward in her affection to me than I am to her.
Isn't she married to Paul Bettany?
She is, but she's just using him to get to me, I feel.
Oh, okay. See, I thought you were using her to get to Paul Bettany so that you could get on Avengers.
Yeah, that might be it. The voice of Jarvis, of course.
And Ultron.
Oh, of course, yes.
Just, you know, make it topical.
Yeah, okay.
Make it relevant. I don't know. I'm doing a fist thing. Well, I say make it relevant as if I'm fist bumping. What am I doing?
I have no idea. I know that your daughter would look at you with her head in her hands if she could see you.
Yeah, well, she can't because fortunately she's not in my office.
Excellent.
So, yes, I mean, and also, I think it's, you know, it has Andre the Giant in it.
Yes.
And I have a soft spot for Andre the Giant. I particularly have a soft spot for him in that film because I think he's great in that film. And there's so many good one-liners or little speeches.
Inconceivable.
Inconceivable is brilliant.
Yeah.
So I think it should definitely be on. And Rodents of Unusual Size.
Yeah.
Princess Bride. If you haven't seen Princess Bride, do yourself a favour. Go see it.
Definitely.
What's your last one?
My last one, I guess you'd categorise as a horror film, although it is it's certainly there's a heavy slab of black comedy in there as well.
Ooh.
And
horror but black comedy.
Yeah, and when I was thinking about the kind of that genre again, you know, trying to genre hop, The Shining very nearly made it in. I considered Nightmare on Elm Street, but never really bought into that whole Freddy Krueger hysteria.
Right.
What else have I got on here that's vaguely horror? Poltergeist. I love Poltergeist.
Poltergeist is really good. And scary as well.
Scary as bejesus. The second one was a bit lame. I kind of like the third one with the mirrors. But
Oh, yes. Yeah. But the first one is awesome, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I remember especially if you watch it in the dark and you don't know. It's one of these movies, you don't know what's going to happen.
No.
It's awesome.
And for those that have seen it, would never be able to go to sleep with any form of clown toy in the room with you. So, but they didn't make it. But the one that did is the film that even now, means that I am scared to go on the London Underground. It's American Wealth in London.
Awesome, awesome, awesome movie. Absolutely fantastic.
Directed by John Landis, who also did Blues Brothers, of course.
Yeah.
Just fantastic, fantastic film. I saw it on, I think, probably pirate video when I was way under 18 in London at the time and probably didn't sleep three nights afterwards. Scared the living bejesus out of me. But it's one that I will watch again and again. As I say, it genuinely still carries a little shard of fear in me that if I find myself, when I had to occasionally get out of London and on the tube, if I found myself at night on a tube platform on my own, I would poop myself with fear purely for that whole scene of the guy being chased through the tube station by the werewolf. Won an Oscar, I think, for the special effects for the transformation scene.
I think the transformation is brilliant. Unfortunately, if you watch it now and you've been spoiled by CGI.
Yeah.
Then you think, but it's on a par certainly in the history of special effects with the Jason and the Argonauts skeleton fight.
Yeah. Well, the other one that was a gnat's pube away from making it on my list, which is kind of crosses the sci-fi horror genre, was The Thing. Carpenter's The Thing.
Yep.
Which, again, had, for its time, some phenomenal special effects. But, you know, these are days pre-CGI, so they were all done with either, you know, mechanical or physical special effects. Some stop motion, some model, but it was all kind of in camera. There was no real sort of CGI post-production. I agree with you. When you watch them and you compare it to some of the newer stuff with CGI, you can see that it's not as good, but because, you know, the film geek in me then reminds myself, yeah, but this is all kind of in camera effects.
Yeah. This is air bladders and bits of steel stretching out rubber and
animatronics and all of that kind of stuff.
It is very good.
And it's got Jenny Agutter in a shower.
I was going to say, you were deriding me about Jamie Lee Curtis getting a top off. Doesn't Jenny Agutter get naked?
Yeah, but you don't see them. Not in
the many times you rewind and play that scene.
No, there's a bit of side boob and there's a bit of buttock. But there's no full-on boo. Trust me, I've seen every single frame of that film looking for it. But it's Jenny Agutter.
We like to out Matt as Mr. Skin.
but just a brilliant film. It's got Griffin Dunne plays his very early into the film dead friend who comes back and is kind of trying to poke him and remind him of what's going on. It's got a couple of really scary dream sequences in it.
It has the best pub in the world at the beginning.
But it has, absolutely. And it's one that I always make reference to. And people look at me strangely when we go into a pub that's a bit local. And I say, God, it's like the Slaughtered Lamb in here. What? It's like the film out of the pub out of American Wealth London. Oh, yeah. It's got very young Rick Mayles in the pub.
Is that?
Yeah. It's a very young, yes, one for your watch back now. It's got very young Rick Mayles in that pub.
I'm going to have to watch that back now.
But yes, and bless him, I can't even think of his bloody name now. Guy out of Kez. The old guy. That's enough!
Oh, right. Yeah, I know who you mean.
But brilliant. Just, frankly, a brilliant film. Sad at the end, because, you know, he's a werewolf by circumstance as opposed to intent. It's bloody funny in places, you know, when he wakes up in the zoo and has the whole scene of trying to get back to the flat while being naked. Mummy, a naked American man just stole my balloons.
It is a very, very good movie.
And in places, genuinely scary.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what your last one was because you're extremely confident.
I am extremely confident on my last one. So my last one, there was basically a toss-up between two movies.
You said toss.
Yes. I realised as I said it. I knew it was going to be a science fiction movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know what it is then.
But it was a toss-up between two movies.
Mm-hmm.
Both science fiction movies.
Yeah.
And the fact that I gave away yesterday that there is no Arnie movies on my list means it's not Terminator.
Yeah.
For a long time, it was Terminator.
Yeah.
Because I love Terminator.
Mm.
I've watched it thousands of times.
I mean, yes. Can I do a quote and you can tell me if I'm right then?
Go on then.
The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long?
Yes. So what is it?
It's Blade Runner.
It is Blade Runner. Love Blade Runner. I love Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Even his dire movies. Like Prometheus, for example,
yeah,
are still heads and shoulders above the majority of movies.
Yeah, I mean, his mediocre movies are better than a lot of other directors' best movies.
And Blade Runner is not a mediocre movie.
Not by any means.
Absolutely fantastic. You know, Harrison Ford as a character as far away from Han Solo and Indiana Jones as you could probably get.
Yeah.
Amazing performance from Rutger Hauer. Probably his best performance.
Oh, by far and away.
Though I must admit, when we were just talking about fantasy films, and I was thinking, I didn't think of Lady Hawk.
Mm.
And he's quite good in Lady Hawk.
Yeah.
But he's amazing,
yeah,
in Blade Runner, and it has the best done cyberpunk world that has been seen on film.
Yeah,
I mean, compared with anything that has come since then.
Yeah, that kind of almost dystopian, dirty sci-fi.
Yeah. But with the hard, you know, the hard edge to it, the Japanese Chinese influence that, yeah, if you read any William Gibson, I mean, it's all laced with that stuff. But Blade Runner's before that,
yeah,
and it's just influenced. I mean, it's influenced me massively in, you know, in gaming, and I'm still, you know, I'm convinced that part of my ongoing quest for a good sci-fi skirmish game,
mm-hmm,
is partly, well, massively driven by wanting to play a game in the Blade Runner universe.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. That definitely, that kind of, I always refer to it as kind of hard sci-fi. So that, yes, that stuff, you know, that's firmly grounded on a near future, a risible kind of an evolutionary future rather than kind of the fantastical 40K type stuff or, you know, the Star Wars-esque space opera kind of sci-fi.
Yeah, and I think that my appeal, my love for it has only been increased by the ambiguity around it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, there were different cuts for different markets and slight changes in the cuts make slight differences to how you interpret certain characters.
That was the question I was going to ask, is are you with voiceover or without voiceover?
I'm without voiceover.
Yeah.
But I am in the Deckard is a replicant camp.
Okay.
And certainly I think that, and I can't remember whether it was Harrison Ford or Ridley Scott came out and said yes. As far as they were concerned, they were certainly playing it that way.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
Mm.
I just think it's a brilliant, brilliant movie.
Yeah.
Sean Young is excellent in it. It's her only, yeah, good movie that she ever made.
She was in Stripes, which we talked about.
Was she good in Stripes?
Well, she kind of was a bit sexy in Stripes. She wore it.
Well, she's sexy in other things. Yeah. What's that Kevin Costner movie?
No Way Out. The one where she does him in the limo.
Yes, and then she gets thrown off the balcony by...
Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman, thank you. She's good in that. She's sexy in that.
Why can't I use my powers for good? Why can't I have a retention of information that's actually of any use?
So she's good in that movie. Yeah. She's not good in that movie. Yeah. She's sexy in that movie. Yeah. But she is good.
Oh, she is good. Paper. Yeah, she's very good in it. I kind of like it. I'm conflicted because I kind of like the ambiguity that comes with the no voiceover. Deckard is a replicant. Part of me kind of likes the voiceover because it is reminiscent of some of the old kind of detective stuff, you know, the Sam Spade kind of Mickey Spade kind of things.
I seem to remember I read somewhere that's why they put it on, because obviously if you look at it, if you look at Blade Runner and you look at it with the eye of it being a noir 30s type film, it is a noir 30s type film, just with a future gloss on it.
Yeah.
You know, Deckard and Sam Spade are cut from the same cloth.
Oh, definitely.
But it's still brilliant. I mean, and the fact that it still influences things now.
Mm.
So computer game Fallout Las Vegas or New Vegas.
Yeah.
You can get Deckard's gun.
Yeah.
At some point, and it makes all the same noises.
Oh, cool.
So it does the
when you
reload and everything. It's just an outstanding, and it still looks good. The special effects still look good. The lighting is amazing.
Yep. Van Gelder's soundtrack is superb.
The soundtrack is brilliant. It's just so atmospheric, and it's one of these films that normally I don't like films that are shot in a really darkly.
Mm.
And there's masses of Blade Runner where it's shot with very harsh lighting.
Yeah.
So that everything is sort of in stark silhouette. And certainly watching it on, you know, modern LCD screens, where the blacks sort of tend to wash over everything.
Yeah.
You can, but it's still, Blade Runner still works.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just trying to think of probably the most recent film I've seen that's had that similar kind of thing was the remake of Total Recall, which again had that very, very similar to kind of dystopian setting of, and you could see the Blade Runner influence throughout it with, you know, the big screens and the Oriental influence. So, you know, even in the most modern sci-fi films, it's having
it. Well, there's a couple of things that I was thinking of. Dread.
Yeah.
Has that same quality. So, you know, they certainly, and I'm sure that if you looked at the history of Mega City 1, then you would see Mega City 1 being influenced by Blade Runner.
Mm.
Because they're obviously around at the same time.
Yeah.
And the other thing was a TV series, and I can't remember the name of the TV series. It was cancelled. It only did 13 episodes. It was one of last year's crops. But it also, interestingly, it also had Carl Urban in the lead.
Mm.
And it was a sort of a future police procedural.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it took masses of ideas out of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it obviously didn't play with the American market, but I thought it was a really good TV show.
Yeah.
I mean, it had Carl Urban in it, so
yeah,
can't go that far wrong.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, certainly is the pinnacle of the kind of cyberpunk era for filmmaking, Blade Runner.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
Yeah, only go. Unfortunately, cyberpunk. You know, the whole cyberpunk thing only goes downhill after Blade Runner, because your next entry is Johnny Mnemonic,
or Johnny Moronic, as it was known. certainly by a lot of people, including me.
Yeah, it's not a very good movie.
No.
And there hasn't been a good. You know, there hasn't been a good. There's been things that are similar. I suppose you could argue Inception is. Plays around with some of the same ideas,
which is probably in my top five all-time favorite films.
It's a very, very good movie, Inception. But then basically you would put any Chris Nolan movie in your top
five. I am a bit of a Chris Nolan fan.
You love him.
Yes. I'm just using him to get to Jennifer Connelly, though.
Another way to Jennifer Connelly.
Anyway, Jennifer Connelly is good by me. I'm just looking through other star. Oh, here, yeah, more sci-fi films that were considered but didn't make the list. Because I guess you'd consider Blade Runner sci-fi.
Yes, certainly would.
As I say, The Thing is kind of a sci-fi horror crossover, but we've covered that. I wondered if this one might make your list. RoboCop.
I like RoboCop a lot. I think it's dated.
Yeah.
Quite badly. I still remember going to the cinema, though, and seeing it, and the scene at the end after he's been in the chemical spill and the car drives through him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's very, very biting on many levels. The whole I'll buy that for a dollar stuff. Yeah. And the various adverts. I particularly like Let's Play Thermonuclear War.
Yeah.
But I do think that it has dated slightly.
Yeah, which is a shame because the remake, which was it this year or last year?
Last year, I think. I haven't seen it, the remake.
It's a watchable action film, but doesn't have that kind of same almost satirical bite. I mean, the parallels you can almost draw with kind of some of those early Verhoeven films is with the remakes of the Romero films, like The Crazies and the Dawn or the Dead series of films, which had a real kind of social commentary going on as well, doesn't seem to have carried through. And, you know, the new RoboCops, it's watchable, but it doesn't have that kind of, you know, the stuff around the consumer culture and the privatization of public services and all of that sort of stuff, you know, that sort of stuff is kind of missing from it. As you say, that sort of social bite. Just going down what else I've got from a sci-fi point of view. Escape from New York.
That's very good.
Good film, but again, hasn't dated well.
No, it hasn't.
Just going through my list. I don't suppose you count Back to the Future necessarily as a science fiction film.
I was so tempted to put Back to the Future on the list.
Yeah. And the other one that I've got, which I guess is science fiction, and I need to double check the dates, Mad Max 2.
Well, Mad Max 1 is 79, isn't it?
I think Mad Max 2 is 81, but I've not checked.
81.
There you go. Great film.
Very good.
Watched it again recently. Still a great film. We're keenly, obviously, awaiting the, I don't know whether it's a remake or a reboot with Tom Hardy.
I think it's a reboot.
Thunder Road or Fury Road? Whatever the new remake. They've just finally got round to releasing a decent teaser trailer. And it looks as every bit as bonkers as Mad Max 2 was.
Mad Max 2 is very good. It's very, very, very clever. The little kid is cool.
Yeah.
The boomerang is brilliant.
Yeah.
And has a brilliant payoff.
Yes.
That is a very good movie.
I've got to very quickly run through some that I've got on my nearly list just to hear your reaction.
We are
to.
So out of time.
Okay. Back to the Future we've mentioned, blah, blah, blah. Big Trouble in Little China.
Good film, hasn't aged particularly well.
Scarface with Pacino.
Brilliant. Outstandingly good.
We've mentioned all those. This might make you howl with derision. Karate Kid, the original.
Next.
Okay. Somebody on the Twitters today mentioned Lost Boys.
Now that's a good movie.
You see, I like it, but because I'm older, I prefer Near Dark.
No, I like Lost Boys. I mean, older than who? You're not older than me.
No, but older than a teenage girl.
Oh, okay. You know, squirting water pistols at vampires.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Kiefer Sutherland's very good in it.
Yeah.
Again, good soundtrack.
In fairness, yes, I did listen to the soundtrack for years afterwards.
Death by Stereo.
Yeah, because I'm obviously of a wargaming bent, there's the Vietnam films all came out in the 80s. You've got Platoon, Hamburger Hill, Full Metal Jacket, to name just but
Full Metal Jacket is, of those is my favourite.
Probably Hamburger Hill for me.
Is that the Clint Eastwood one, Hamburger Hill?
No, that's... You're thinking of Heartbreak Ridge.
Heartbreak Ridge.
Which also came out in the 80s. Untouchables came out in the 80s.
That's good.
Glory came out in the 80s, which is a brilliant film.
Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick and Denzel Washington. Denzel got his Oscar, his first Oscar for that one.
I remember. I can't remember who it was I had a discussion about that with, because I think Matthew Broderick should have won an Oscar for that movie.
I agree. He's brilliant in it.
It is, without a doubt, Matthew Broderick's best acting movie.
Yes.
And it is amazing. And the fact it's a true story as well.
Yeah.
You know, you look at something like 12 Years a Slave.
Mm.
A lot of the issues that 12 Years a Slave brought up, maybe are covered in Glory. Maybe not as in the brutality of it.
Yeah.
Though there is, you know, there is the scene after Denzel gets whipped.
Yeah.
Where they're putting the grease on his back and stuff, and he's all, you know, he's been cut up and everything, and...
And the whole thing about the just wanting to get boots because the feet are all in tatters. Yeah. Brilliant film. I still don't think it gets the accolades it deserves.
I would agree, because that isn't that. You know, I'd forgotten about that, but now you remind me, I'm going to go and dig that out, because that is an absolutely outstandingly good movie.
And I guess to end with one that I know that you appreciate. I know heavily influences our love of Dead Man's Hand is Pale Rider, of course, was the 80s.
Love Pale Rider.
Brilliant film.
Clint back on form in Pale Rider.
Yeah.
After things like Deadpool.
And all those terrible ones.
But Guns N' Roses are in Deadpool, so...
Yeah, it doesn't make it good.
No, it doesn't make it... You're right, it doesn't make it good.
I'm just, as we talk, just typing something in, because I think that 70s is my favourite ever Clint Eastwood film. Talk amongst yourselves, yeah. Thoughts. Outlaw Josie Wales, 1976.
Clint Eastwood movies, it's either very early when he's doing spaghetti westerns, or very late when he became a director.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my almost list. Oh, and the other one on the side that I've got is Akira. Akira came out in the 80s, would you believe?
I'm not sure I saw it in the 80s, to be honest.
I didn't see it in the 80s. I didn't see it in probably until mid-90s.
I probably saw it early 90s. Okay. No, that's good. And deserves a lot of accolades.
Mm.
I suppose people don't realise how much it changed certain chunks of culture.
Yeah. Again, it's probably the other kind of cyberpunky film, I guess, almost.
Yeah.
That whole
anime genre that they were putting together, like, of those type of movies. Yeah. I mean, you and I were talking about them the other day.
Yeah.
I suppose you can say they're all cyberpunk.
Yeah. So that kind of covers everything that I had on my nearly list and my top five. So I think the listeners will clearly vote that my top five was better than yours, but don't feel bad about that.
I seriously doubt it, because I have Blade Runner.
You just went for fan favourites. I thought outside the box.
You thought outside the box, yeah, and went for Red Dawn.
Yes, great.
And I hardly went for fan favourites with Footloose.
Oh, I don't know. There's a raft of now middle-aged women's that will still go slightly moist and wobbly at the thought of Kevin Bacon dancing through that barn.
So, gentle listener, if you can have we could have a vote, and if you could all tell Matt that his list was far inferior to mine, that would be lovely.
Not at all.
Okay. Well, we've whittled on for ages.
Yes.
We haven't said hello to Jason Isaacs yet.
So hello to Jason Isaacs.
And with that, I've been Mike.
And I've been Matt.
Bye-bye. You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.